then lo and behold, we see this report released, and it is basically a breath of fresh air. You know, it is advocating for pretty much exactly the things that we need to do as a Commonwealth to decarbonize the building sector.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is being recorded in mid-February of 2023. The global carbon dioxide level is 421 parts per million. That's way above the 350 parts per million the scientists say is a safe level. We need to get to work. And on top of that, there's only 2,512 days left until the year 2030, so the clock keeps ticking. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we had an interesting discussion with a lawyer from the Conservation Law Foundation about something called the Commission, the Clean Heat Commission. And we're going to continue that conversation today with another guest I'll introduce in a minute. But let me just remind you what the Clean Heat Commission is, was, what it means. Now, Massachusetts, as far back as 2008, started setting goals for the reduction of carbon dioxide emissions, global warming emissions. This is with the Global Warming Solutions Act way back when. More recently, the Massachusetts legislature has passed additional laws that set tighter and tighter guidelines for what emissions are allowed. Through the year 2050 now, we have pretty hard targets, hard and fast, legally binding targets for how we're going to reduce our carbon emissions by 50% by the year 2030. So our annual carbon dioxide emissions from cars and buildings and all kinds of places by 2030. And further, the legislature set five-year benchmarks that we would check in. And further, so there's really a lot of good stuff here. They said relatively short timelines to take action and keep track of things. And they divided up all the carbon emissions into what are called subsectors or sublimits. And so you start thinking about transportation, carbon dioxide emission from transportation, carbon dioxide emission from electricity generation. And one of those sublimits was carbon dioxide emissions from buildings. And of course, that's a big issue in Massachusetts because buildings emit a lot of carbon dioxide primarily by burning natural gas to heat the place, right? And so there's a lot of, and in order to achieve our carbon dioxide emission goals by the year 2030, we're contemplating an enormous effort to retrofit lots and lots of buildings in the state of Massachusetts to get them away from natural gas and onto something else so they're not emitting greenhouse gases. And then, of course, that, if you think about it for a second, that'll give you pause because that is a big challenge. Anyway, what past Governor Baker did a couple of years ago was to say he wanted a commission of people to go study the problem of reducing carbon dioxide emissions from the building sector. Essentially, in here in Massachusetts, that essentially amounts to how do we heat our buildings? So there's this thing called the Clean Heat Commission. And it did its work for a long time and finally released a report last December on what the state needs to do to get the carbon dioxide emissions out of its buildings in time for 2030. This report from last December had a lot of really cool stuff in it, and we decided to speak with an expert in it, Mr. Kyle Murray from the Acadia Center, who is the program director, is a senior advocate and the program director at the Acadia Center, which is, he can explain it better, but which is a nonprofit think tank in downtown Boston or in Massachusetts that's grappling with these big issues. And so we are pleased to have with us Kyle Murray. Kyle, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Really happy to be here.
That's great. So I just gave a long-winded spiel about what the Clean Heat Commission report is. I know you've thought a little bit about it. Did I get the, shall we say, the provenance of the Clean Heat Commission right? And what should people know about it?
Yeah, no, I think you really nailed it, and you nailed the background on it as well. And just a little bit of the history on it too is a lot of environmental advocates were concerned looking at the makeup of the commission for a while. It seemed like there were a lot of industry representatives on it, and some of our friendly environmental voices less so.
And when you say industry, you mean like natural gas and real estate and construction industries that have a stake in what's going to happen, right? They're the ones that are going to get ruffled if something changes, right?
Exactly. And that was also paired with seemingly a real lack of communication from the commission. We received very little in the way of reports. There weren't many hearings. You know, it really seemed very closed off, and we weren't sure where the commission was going to go with it. Honestly, a little, you know, personally, and I know a few of my colleagues, we were a little doom and gloom on it. We thought it was just going to end up being something that, you know, still, you know, takes incremental steps or calls for incremental steps, but doesn't really tackle the big questions. And then lo and behold, we see this report released, and it is basically a breath of fresh air. You know, it is advocating for pretty much exactly the things that we need to do as a Commonwealth to decarbonize the building sector. Really.
How did that miracle happen? Right. I mean, good things don't usually happen behind closed doors. So do you have any sense, not to like analyze that too much, but I mean, do you know?
You know, I can't say for certain, but, you know, I'd have to say it's probably due to some really hard work from the members of the commission, and just in an acknowledgement of, you know, there's no time to waste on this stuff. It's not the time for half measures is long past, and we really need to be moving as quickly as possible. It's pretty stark, you know, when you look at it. There's just no time to dither and debate, well, can we really afford to leave the gas, you know, disrupt the gas system right now? The report basically says we can't afford not to do that right now.
And when you say disrupt the gas system, you mean basically stop using natural gas, right?
Yeah, it calls for no new investments in fossil fuel infrastructure, natural gas infrastructure. And it takes a pretty firm stance on so-called, you know, renewable natural gases, such as, you know, renewable natural gas, hydrogen, and really says they don't see that being really any sort of significant part of our clean energy future for buildings, which is pretty much at odds with plans that our utilities have released and that the fossil fuel industry has put forward that really say, no, RNG is the fuel of the future. It is going to clean up our building system. And this report basically says, no, that's not how it's going to be.
So that's a hot button for me, because it just for the listeners who may not be tracking this as closely as perhaps you and I do, there is the Clean Heat Commission, right? In parallel, there was another commission that goes under different names, but I think it was called the Clean Fuel Commission, or the Future of Gas, right?
Yeah, so that is a parallel effort. I'll go into that a little bit right
okay,
now.
Actually, okay, okay. Go ahead. Yeah, please.
That was opened up in the Department of Public Utilities. It's DPU docket 20-80, and it's colloquially called the Future of Gas. And that was actually opened thanks to then Attorney General, now Governor Maura Healey, who asked the department to look into, hey, we know the future of gas in the Commonwealth is not going to be the same as what we're doing right now. And we have these pretty strict requirements for the Global Warming Solutions Act. Please open an investigation into this so we can determine what paths we need to move forward in on this issue.
The issue of how are we going to get to the what's the gas industry going to do about reaching these tight limits that we've set for ourselves, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, business as usual is not acceptable anymore.
And I mean, we can go into it, I think, in great depth, but this other commission is basically, they're the ones that are dancing around saying we can use hydrogen and methane gas from landfills and preserve the business model of the utilities. And I think what you're saying is that, so there's that one thing, but then this Clean Heat Commission, which is the main focus of what we were talking about, they come out and basically say, that emperor has no clothes on. You can't go that way. That's not what we can do. We need to stop with all the fossil fuels, right?
Sort of, just a little correction, just on the 2080, the future of gas, it's not a commission, it's an investigation on the Department of Public Utilities.
Okay.
And the way the department opted to do that was basically to allow the utilities to hire a consultant to conduct modeling and, you know, develop a report with recommendations for them. Mm-hmm. Based upon that report, the utilities then developed sort of net zero achievement plans that they would, you know, ask the department to approve. That then, after those plans were submitted to the department then started doing its own sort of investigation, you know, diving into the details, asking questions. And unfortunately, you know, that started in 2020. You know, we're in 2023 and we haven't had a ruling in that. So we're still waiting to see where that ends up. But
the bottom line is that the Commission on Heat contradicts maybe the optimistic hopes of the utilities about the future of continuing to use gas, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And specifically on, you know, the subject of things like renewable natural gas, which the utilities really see as the fuel of the future for heating. They do say, you know, to the credit, they also say they want to pair it with increased electrification, energy efficiency, and all those good things that we love. But they see a very large role for renewable natural gas.
And the renewable natural gas, remind me, is basically methane from landfills that, right, that's what they hope to capture and use.
That's correct. That's correct. And using, you know, using certain feedstocks that are around the country for that. And so during the process, one of the things, the 2080 process, one of the things we criticized at length was the modeling. We noted that it was fairly flawed in that it doesn't consider out-of-state emissions for renewable natural gas. And so, you know, let's say we get some from Pennsylvania. There's emissions that happen in the processing in Pennsylvania. There's emissions that happen on the way from Pennsylvania to Massachusetts, because we know we have a fairly leaky gas system. The way the current greenhouse gas inventory works in Massachusetts is they don't factor that in at all. So RNGNs can end up looking pretty good from an emissions standpoint if you ignore all the parts in the chain when it's leaking.
Right.
So,
right. Interesting.
So that's why they see RNG as a sort of better option from an emissions standpoint. You know, at the end of the day, it's still methane. It's still methane that you're burning in homes. It's still methane that's going to stoves, you know.
Right.
It's all methane at the end of the day.
And so the Commission on Heat, which is the report that came in December, says that we need to stop building this infrastructure. I guess in your blog, you also mentioned that we're talking about the way to say that is the future is electric, right? That was the comment you were making there, is that the commission basically says we need to go all electric everywhere. And that's a more positive statement about what the future of heat commission sees, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I love this quote from the report. The Commonwealth's long-term building decarbonization strategy requires transitioning customers from existing pipeline gas infrastructure to electric infrastructure and, where appropriate, given technical and financial feasibility, network geothermal districts. It's just saying flat out, we need to move off gas. we need to move to electric and geothermal. And those will both play a pretty big role.
Super. I guess one of the additional questions that I'm interested in is what the report said about essentially the issue of equity, which is the idea that, you know, there's going to – so, dear listeners, what's being contemplated here is that across the entire state of Massachusetts, everybody's going to have to change eventually within the next 10 years, change out their heating system. And some people, some areas and families and communities are much more financially capable of doing that than others, right? So the question is, how do we, in an equitable way, since we all have to move together, how do we help and make sure that this requirement that we're heading towards of getting away from natural gas, that the impact of that is equitable? I mean, what did the report say?
Yeah, I mean, again, this was another part that really was heartening to read. You know, in big, basically bold letters, they need to center equity, engagement, and representation in all aspects of our building decarbonization principles and practices, which is basically saying, you know, we can't leave anyone behind. The natural gas system right now is relatively affordable because of the large amount of customers who are on it. As there is a shrinking amount of individuals on it, the cost to maintain that system to each individual customer on it go up and up and up and up and up.
As the numbers get smaller and smaller. I mean, the costs stay the same, but you have fewer people to pay for it, right?
Exactly. And so the issue with that is right now, as we've seen, the knock on electrification has been that, well, wealthy people can afford to put a heat pump in their home, you know, insulate their home really well, get all those efficiency things you really need. And then they're off the gas system. So that means if that were the path that we took as a state, that would mean it would be the individuals with maybe the lowest quality homes in terms of insulation. The individuals who can least afford to pay for it would be the ones on the final ones on the gas system, which would really just drive their bills and rates up pretty dramatically. We have seen efforts with the state's efficiency program to really ramp up efforts to reach low-income, moderate-income, and environmental justice populations in recent years. But it's still not enough. You know, we're still not seeing the levels of transformation that we need, because in some cases, you know, a couple hundred dollars, you know, even if you're waiving so many of the fees along the way, which is incredible, even a few hundred dollars can be too much for certain people to be able to afford.
Right.
And, you know, the report says front and center, that's not acceptable. We cannot leave people behind.
Yeah, I know that MCAN is interested in questions about net zero buildings, retrofitting. And again, the classic example, I come from New Bedford, right? There's a lot of triple-decker wooden tenements there that were built in 1910, right? Those all have to be retrofitted, right? And how are we going to accomplish that? I mean, those are big-ticket items, and somehow the state needs to be involved in making sure that those things progress in a timely way. That's great to see that that's included in the report. I mean, another fascinating thing that I think that the report touched on, I hope you can comment on, is the idea that Massachusetts has a bureaucracy. The different bureaucracies all have slightly different mandates and slightly different responsibilities. And they're not necessarily all aligned in the sense of being essentially working at cross purposes occasionally because they have different mandates. And I think that Governor Healey has appointed someone to essentially sit atop that pyramid. But what does the report say, and what are the prospects for getting, in particular, say, the DPU and the DOER, the Department of Conservation and the MBTA and all these things going in the same direction?
Yeah, I mean, it hits right on that topic. And the Governor Healey appointing Melissa Hoffer as in that climate chief role to really help coordinate was a really great sign. And I think, you know, she's really hitting the ground running. And you know, she's someone who has just vast, vast experience, and I know she'll be great in the role. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's basically what the report said is there's too many disparate things out there. People don't know where to go. You know, if they want to get one aspect of their building here, if they want to do something out here, they have to go to another area. So it recommends the creation of a building decarbonization clearinghouse, basically a one-stop shop for, you know, I'm a consumer. I just want to get my home, you know, insulated well, a heat pump, maybe a water heater, you know, all that. And, you know, figure out all the different credits and rebates out there. And so I can just go to that website and it'll tell me everything I need to know. Or at least that's the goal of it right now. And a big part of, I believe, Melissa Hoffer's role is going to be also figuring out those federal credits, because that's such a tough area, you know, knowing there's federal credits, there's state credits, there's maybe your city and town has a credit too. So, just figuring out how to get consumers, the home transformation that they need at the lowest cost, I think this building decarbonization clearinghouse will be really, really helpful.
I completely agree. I mean, the analogy I have in my head is that when the Affordable Care Act was introduced in 2010, there were people called navigators that literally were there on the phone to help you figure out what to do. And something, I imagine something like that is what's in the cards here, right?
That's what I'd envision. You know, we don't know what it's going to what shape it's going to take necessarily at the moment. One of the things actually I'm a little critical about the report is that it's a little short on details in some areas. There are certain parts of the report where I'd really like them to have gone a little deeper, provide a little more concrete recommendation. But, you know, that's a small thing in comparison to how great the report is. And I'll say on the Affordable Care Act, I hope the website rollout is a little better than the Affordable Care Act rollout, but you know.
I mean, I think that people, so this is just one slight level down. I think that people are familiar now with something called Mass Save, which is run by the utilities at the behest of the state government. And I think the report singles out and says that Mass Save is not a good clearinghouse, right? You could say that Mass Save, and this is back to this issue that the priorities are different, that Mass Save is trying to reduce costs, I think, and have you weatherize your home as opposed to necessarily finding you all these other wonderful new federal, which, I mean, is hard, as you say, it's hard to figure out the federal stuff, much less the state and local. But the Mass Save program needs to be substantially revamped, given new priority and sort of, I think the report suggests, a sort of a standalone, quasi-corporate kind of thing in order to be truly and have as its main goal carbon reductions at the best cost. And that would require legislative action, right?
Yes, that's correct. You know, the Mass Save program is currently, you know, just, or the state's efficiency programs are currently, the administration of them is granted to the utilities through statute. So, you know, a change to that would require a statute change. And, you know, I think the report notes the Clean Heat recommendations note a few really important things, which are, you know, Mass Save doesn't hit everything we need for this. For example, municipal light plants are left out of the Mass Save program because they don't pay into it. They don't receive the benefits from it. And that's a pretty significant chunk of the state is on municipal light power. Additionally, you know, I will say the utilities follow the mandates provided to them through statute. You know, they are, at the end of the day, they are for-profit companies who have a duty to their shareholders. And so they try, I think, to the best of their abilities to follow that sort of dual mandate of we have shareholders we need to, you know, we need to keep them happy and we need to keep the state happy by fulfilling that climate mandate on top of that. And that puts them in a real tricky bind. You know, it's I don't envy them on that front, because, you know, what we know about the amount of funding necessary to really do a radical transformation of our buildings ASAP, just to get into it on a little thing of what, you know, the way we fund most of our electrification right now, most of our, you know, the Mass Save program comes through electric rates. And well, if we are trying to ask them to fund large amounts of electrification, well, they'd have to raise rates to fund that. So that means we would be putting people on higher electric rates at the same time we're electrifying their homes, which could result in higher bills. So we need to find a new source of funding for this, all of this program, that is not just, you know, not just those electric rates. I've worked with MCAN closely on that zero carbon renovation fund. You know, I think that's a really good option. But the point on that issue is that there's no silver bullet. There's no one thing where the funding just needs to come from. You know, a clean heat standard has been raised, and a clean heat standard is a great idea. We're really excited to be working on that. But that alone isn't going to be enough to fund all that we need for electrification.
So I want to come back to the clean heat standard to find out what that is. But I think, just to back up your point, I think there's an additional issue that the utilities get money from the sale of gas, but that cannot be used by law to fund the electrification. Is that fair? There's some, and again, you're back to how do we align all these organizations to the same goal, right? And this all would require legislative action to make sure that we get these sort of things that cross purposes resolved. Is that fair?
Yes. Ratepayer dollars and where they go is sort of seen as a sacred thing in the utility world of, you know, electric money goes to the electric side, gas money goes to the gas side. So gas money can fund, you know, insulation in homes. It can do those sorts of things. But when you're asking the swap of customers, and there's the additional issue of Eversource and National Grid, our largest utilities in the state, some parts of the state that have Eversource gas have National Grid electric and vice versa. So you'd basically be asking, you know, every customer that electrifies in Eversource gas territory in that area becomes a National Grid customer all of a sudden. So Eversource would be losing customers. So again, it's, you know, it puts them in a, I really want to be fair to them in that it puts them in a tough bind on a lot of these, on a lot of these issues. But, and here's the big, you know, but at the end of the day, these climate goals aren't an option. Like, you know, we can't afford to just, you know, I am sympathetic to the position that a lot of these situations are in, but we need to hit these climate goals. We need to ramp up electrification. We need all this stuff as soon as possible. So I'm a bit at a loss of how to do it.
That's why
as we've been doing it.
Right. And I think, but the big take-home point is that the report recognizes that there are alignments of different of groups in bureaucracies, both to provide sort of help to individuals who want to redo their own homes, but also at this sort of statutory mandates that they give to the DPU. Like the DPU doesn't, the Department of Public Utilities in Massachusetts does not have carbon dioxide emissions reductions as a mandate. All they have is reliability and cost. Is that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. And does that need to change?
That was correct a few years ago. In the last legislative session, there was a new, the DPU was given a new mandate. So in addition to reliability and cost, they now have to consider health, safety, I believe cybersecurity, and reduction in greenhouse gas emissions.
Oh, good.
So that is an important thing. We are only now starting to see how that plays out and how that factors into the DPU's decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I will say a little frustratingly, I've seen it been used to justify oil to gas conversions because, well, it's lower greenhouse gas emissions, therefore it's a carbon reduction measure. So, you know, that's a frustration. But, you know, we're going to see a new DPU, two new DPU commissioners coming in, you know, and who knows how they will apply that standard.
Interesting. So tell me, let's go back to the question. You mentioned something called a clean heat standard. Tell me, what does that mean and what should people know about that?
So a clean heat standard it all depends on how it's designed. That's the thing. Again,
it's still to be determined exactly what it is, but okay. But,
exactly. As it's generally understood, so I think a lot of individuals who are in this field, you know, interested in this, know about the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, also called RGGI. And basically, RGGI is a regional agreement that is a declining cap on greenhouse gas emissions coming from the power sector. A clean heat standard, hypothetically, would be sort of the same thing, though just in the building sector. So it would be requiring a ratcheting down over time of carbon emissions from the building sector. What that is specifically going to look like, you know, we don't know. That's something we're working on. That's something some of our partner organizations are working on. And we're trying to engage with the new administration on that.
But the hallmark of RGGI, so Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, was on the people who generate electricity, which is like a few, you know, maybe 50, 100 power plants, and they could trade the permissions, classic cap and trade. They could buy, and you're saying that potentially the clean heat standard would do something similar, where probably biggish buildings I get to buy, if they do better, if they reduce their carbon dioxide emissions a lot, they could sell that permission to someone else under this reducing cap that is similar to RGGI. Is that?
That's a potential, you know, that's potential of how the program are designed. You know, a lot is on the table here. Yeah. You know, the question of who are the obligated parties, you know, who actually has to pay under this system that's a major question.
Right.
You know, I think as we envision it, it would be more, you know, I guess you'd call them fossil fuel delivery. So that's your propane delivery, but that's also your utilities who are delivering gas, you know, who are delivering gas to homes. It's if you are delivering a fossil fuel heating product, that's where that comes from.
Wow. That is really, I guess I hadn't, I thought that somehow the clean heat standard was, we're all going to measure how much carbon dioxide came out of different, presumably big buildings in downtown Boston. But you're saying it potentially, again, they haven't decided, but potentially more complex and more beneficial, right?
Yeah. I mean, these things are always insanely complex and, you know, could go one of a million different ways in how it's actually designed. We actually got some, I mean, Boston does have the what's called BERDO, which are performance standards for large emitting buildings. And I know some individuals are trying to get that done on a state level too. But I think that would be a separate effort than a clean heat standard.
So tell me, what is the, we've got this report. What's the, is it a tool? Is it a lever? Is it a podium to stand on and lecture? Is it a soapbox? Or how should people use it? How are you using it? How would you suggest the average listener, what should they think and or do about this with this report? What does it allow people to do?
Yeah, to your question on what is it, and you offered a few different options, I say yes to all of the above. I think advocates or you know, the citizen advocate who doesn't necessarily, you know, get paid for this, the person who just cares about this in their spare time and really wants to advocate for it, honestly, look at it like a roadmap. These are the policies we need to get where we need to go. So I should, you know, work to find legislators and, you know, other invested parties who are invested in delivering the types of changes that are recommended in this report. You know, I should look to the administration and you know, send a letter to Energy and Environmental Affairs and say, these are the policies I want. And then, you know, that's kind of what we're doing as the advocates too, the paid advocates as well. So, you know, that's kind of how I've engaged the administration so far on this issue. Has basically been saying, we'll help out work on the details with you. We want to be invested, but this is kind of the laundry list. This is where we go.
It's interesting, to your point, is that the executive summary of this Clean Heat Commission, I mean, the full report is like 80 or 90 pages, but the executive summary puts everything in pretty short order, and you can read it two or three pages, and then you've at least got the laundry list, right? Because, you know, most people don't need to dive way in, but there are, so again, I have to admit, I don't have it in front of me, but there are proposals in front of the legislature that have been put in that MCAN is supporting that I think are relevant. Do you know of any like particular bills that you guys at Acadia Center are pushing that think people should know about?
Well, for one, there's that zero carbon renovation fund. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a big thing we are pushing this session. We worked with MCAN and the rest of that coalition to work on that language, and mm-hmm. That has been filed by Senator Gomez, and I am blanking on the representative.
That's right. I apologize. But I mean, there is a bill there that you know, check out the MCAN site or the Acadia site, and this is the net zero retrofit bill, which is something that is good, right? If you're looking for something to think about. Yeah.
Exactly. There's also on funding too. There's a few proposals on a green bank. We didn't really touch upon that at great length, but that's another thing that's recommended in the report. And there's a few bills out there relative to Green Bank. Part of the tricky thing right now is, you know, bills, it was just filing deadline a couple weeks ago. I'm still tearing through all those bills myself, trying to get the details of everything out there.
And this is the classic, you know, making sausage, right? At the beginning of the session, there's lots and lots of bills, and they change numbers, they change names, there's all kinds of things that happen. But, yeah.
And then, you know, there's a bill out from, I know Senator Cream has filed, that's basically the future of clean heat, I believe it's called. And it envisions a large number of changes that we need to see to the gas infrastructure system. It's tough to say, you know, there are so many recommendations in this report, and there are so many bills that try and deliver on some of them. It can be, you know, difficult to triangulate and, you know, figure out which one's got legs sometimes.
Right.
But I would say if you're just a person at home, you're someone who cares about this issue, and you know a few advocacy organizations that you trust, like MCAN, Acadia Center, hopefully too, Conservation Law Foundation, Environmental League, that type of organization, reach out to them and, you know, ask them what their priorities are, let them know your priorities too, and how you can work together on those sorts of things.
Super, super, super. Oh my goodness. This has been, this is a great discussion, and I think it empowers people who are interested to sort of know where to go to begin their journey, so to speak, which is great. What I will do is we'll put up links to the report and your blog at the Acadia Center. Just quick, tell me the Acadia Center. What does it do? What's the link for Acadia Center?
It's just acadiacenter.org. And, you know, we have the company line, you know, on what we do. But I'd like to call us just, we're the data wonks. We're the nerds who are looking at reading every report, looking at every graph, running the numbers to make sure everything actually lines up. You know, we really care about A big thing for us in that future of gas proceeding was looking at the modeling that they did, that the consultants did, and just noting a lot of flaws in it. Whereas, you know, the average consumer, the average individual reading a 300-page document isn't going to isn't going to be able to look at a graph and be like, there's something wrong on those numbers. I don't know what it is, but
I don't feel good about them.
Yeah. So we really like to dive in on those sorts of areas, the really wonky, difficult areas that don't necessarily, you know, they're not the sexiest in the world, but they're really important. And that's the kind of stuff we do. And we work in the New England and New York region.
Well, I will sleep better tonight knowing that you are on the case. That's a good thing. What we'll do, we'll put up links to all this stuff on the MCAN blog. You can find the MCAN blog on the MCAN website. That's massclimateaction.org. You look to the top, it says newsletter and more. You pull down blog and podcast, and hiding away in there is with the hot links for this show. You'll be able to find it. If you have any ideas or questions or comments or something we ought to talk about in the future, send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we should be thinking about. You're probably listening to us on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please rank us on your favorite distribution app, and then ask your friends to listen to us on their modern podcast distribution app. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We'll close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Kyle, thank you so much for this informative discussion. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time. It was really, really good back and forth, I thought.
That's great. That's great. Thanks for everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.